Okay, thank you, Kathy. I appreciate that great introduction and look forward to helping everyone out there, all the Member Solutions clients that are listening, and anyone, I guess, that will be listening on the recording, to be able to use the sometimes misunderstood and little-known secret of effective, keyword, effective direct mail that will actually work for your school. And you can use direct mail in a few different ways. You can use it to recruit new students, and you can use it in your renewal process. Now, of course, what I mean by renewal process is upgrade process. And real quick, just to define that, that's when you take a beginner student on a 6 or 12 month program, and then within a couple months, you go ahead and set the goal for them and put them on a longer term program, or at least set the goal of black belt for them and get that out of the way. So we use it, and I've been using it over the years in a few different ways. And of course, 99% of the education that I got in using direct mail came from a lot of time that I spent in studying the art. And there's a few different arts that go into it. One art is actually the art of what's called copywriting, and that is how you actually craft words on paper. And the good thing about that is if you're effective at running your school and you're effective at communicating the benefits to your students, or if you've got the so-called elevator pitch down, I guess, where if someone says, hey, tell me a little bit about your school and what you can do for me, and you're able to effectively communicate that, you have the basics and you have the seedlings of being a what they call copywriter. And I've just taken it to a whole different level beyond my school. I do a lot of different things in and outside the industry. And believe me when I tell you, it's one of the most valuable skills that you can master. So copywriting is one skill that goes into direct mail. And what copywriting is basically the words that appear on your postcard, the words that appear on your letter. And that's what the record does. You're either going to use a letter, a brochure, or you're going to use a postcard. I mean, there's really nothing else. The other side of direct mail is, beyond copywriting, is just knowing how and when to use it and who, most importantly, who to send it to. And we're going to cover that. And a few things that we're going to cover real quick, just to go through the bullet points. We're going to talk about how to make your mail stay out of the wastebasket, because basically what happens is, your mail has a short lifespan, you know. It's like shorter than like a guppy. That's the only way I can think about it. It's a very short lifespan. And think about how you sort the mail that comes to your school. I mean, how many letters do you get per week about from a credit card company, you know, offering you, you know, 0% or 2%, whatever the offer at the time is, you get a ton of them. And depending on how good they are, they either live or they die. Just using that as an example. We're going to talk about the different forms of lists, and we're also going to talk about how to make your mail stand out so it basically grabs people by the eyes and makes them read it, and that, again, is a function of copywriting. And then we'll talk about how to easily grow your mailing list, your own mailing list inside your school. There's a lot of ways to easily do that. And then we're going to talk about the 5 deadly mistakes that school owners make when using direct mail. So be sure you don't hang up before this thing is over, because these mistakes will cost you thousands if you make them. So that's what we got in store for the hour or however long it takes us to get through this. And when we run through this, what we want to talk about is really some of the reasons why direct mail is good. For one, it's not expensive. And here's what I mean. Some people look at it and they say, wait a minute, this is really expensive. 41 cents, let's just say you're using a letter. 41 cents, a 2-page or 3-page letter, the cost of the envelope, the printing, the time it takes to put it, and you look at it and you might be into 60 cents, 70 cents. But here's the reason why it's not expensive. It's not expensive for a few reasons. One, you can test it on smaller segments. So let's just pretend I go out there and I get a list. I have a list of 1,000 people, and I want to test a new postcard that I'm thinking about. And I'm not. It's a new postcard, so I'm not quite sure I want to take a gamble and send out all 1,000 of them. Or it's a new letter. I don't want to take a gamble that I want to send out all 1,000 of them. What I can do is I can simply get 200 or 300 of those names, because remember, we're going to pretend that the list is pretty much equal. And then what we're going to do is send out those 200 or 300. And then we're going to see what happens. So that's why direct mail does not have to be expensive. It's only
it's only expensive if you don't apply your same martial arts knowledge. And you know, as a martial artist, that fighting is an art and a science. So that's when it's expensive. And that's what we're going to talk about in some of the mistakes. And when you think about direct mail, the first thing you need to think about is your mathematics. And for those of you who, in high school or college or whatever it is, dislike mathematics, I'm with you. I was never a big math fan, and luckily I married Jamie, and so when the kids have issues with their math, she can help them, I'm sure. I can't. But this math I got down pretty good. And here's what I mean. The first thing you do when you think about direct mail is you look at your math, and you want to make sure you're tilting the odds in your favor. And the big thing that comes into play is what's called your initial transaction. And your initial transaction is basically, of course, what you get up front from a student. In my current school, we are getting about $369 up initially from a brand new single student. And it can go anywhere to $497 to $547 for a multiple or family program initially. So that's the first thing I think about when I use my direct mail. And if I say, okay, I'm going to spend invest $1,000 on the direct mail campaign between everything, printing, postage, the whole nine yards, basically what I need is three people at $369 per month to break even or come out a little bit ahead. I'm very happy with that because now, since our retention is pretty good, and I'm sure if you're listening to this, your retention is pretty good too, the next month, I'm going to collect my first month's tuition from each of those three. Let's pretend maybe I get a referral from one of them. Let's then pretend that, or assume because I have a good renewal process, which is that upgrade process, which actually includes the free letter that you got as one of the simple steps in the process. Now I can have one or two or maybe three of them on an upgraded higher price program within the next 2 or 3 months. That, my friends, is a pretty good investment, and in some cases, you can get anywhere from a, 5 to 10 to 1 return if you're smart. So that's why you should be, one, sold on using direct mail. And I've seen a lot of school owners over the years, they take it to a point of it's working for them, and then for some reason something happens and they stop using it, or the numbers get a little, they have one bad campaign, and then they throw it away. But if you do everything right, if you look at the art side of it, you look at the science side of it, you use the right copy, you send it to the right people, and you put the numbers in your favor, this is almost a can't lose. Seriously, it really is. So that's one of the reasons why I'm really sold on direct mail, and so should you be sold on direct mail. And it can help you grow your school fast. And one thing I know when we opened our brand new school almost a year ago, if I look at the student body, and I just started flipping through the database of the student body, I can tell you that a high percentage of them came in full part or as a portion of them came from direct mail. And what I mean by that is maybe they came by direct mail, but then they maybe showed up at a birthday party or something like that. The mail that we use has been responsible for getting everybody in our school in some way, shape, or form, whether it was the thing that brought them over the edge or whether it was part of something. So your direct mail is one of the best things you can do as a school owner, and here's why also. Studies show that readership in newspapers is down. If you're under 30, the chances of you looking at a newspaper every day are very slim. Most people get their news from the internet now and blogs and RSS feeds. But direct mail is not going anywhere. Another mistake that school owners make when using direct mail, and this is probably just businesses in general, what they do is they get upset when the post office raises their rates. Oh, man, it went from 39 cents to 41 cents. What that does for you is actually makes the recipient's mailbox less cluttered and gives you the opportunity to stand out. I've spent as much as $1.69 to $2 per piece on direct mail campaigns, and I wouldn't invest that if it didn't work. Okay, so here's a few of the points here. Let's cover some of the things that we covered in our bullet points. So let's talk about, real quick, let me just go up here. Let's talk about how to guarantee that it stays out of the wastebasket. Here's a few different things you can do. Again, let's for argument's sake, let's say you're working with letters or you're working with postcards. If you're working with letters, how to get them to stay out of the wastebasket on a first approach is to use what I call the sneak-up approach. And the sneak-up approach is basically where it would just say Mike Dolpe's 849 West Bay Avenue, Barnegat, New Jersey, 08005. And then it would say, it would have in a handwritten font, or it was actually be handwritten, it would have the recipient's name, and it would be in a plain white envelope. Now, here's the trick. Here's the key. The key is when they open it up, it's not going to be just a brochure that falls out, because then they feel like you tricked them, and they feel misled. But no, they open it up, and they get this personal letter from you. Dear Joe, dear Mrs. Jones, whatever it is, or dear friend or dear fellow parent if you're targeting kids. As personal as you can get, as pinpointed as you can get, the better. You can mail merge, and it's very easy, and just put their contact name inside certain fields, and you can easily accomplish that. Most of your printers will be able to accomplish that, too. So you can really make this personal with the technology we have today. So those are some of the keys. Making it personal are some of the keys to make it stand out from the crowd. And the best thing you can do when you first go to a list and start mailing to them is use the sneak-up approach. Again, think of a plain white envelope. Think of handwritten, just your name, not your school's name. Think of the person's name in a handwritten or very close to handwritten font. And it looks like it's the only one that was sent. And then a regular first-class stamp. That's something we're going to talk about at the end, is when people mail bulk and they make huge mistakes. So that's one way to make it stand out, because they look at it, it doesn't look like the rest of the commercial mail. It looks like a personal letter from, you know, Aunt Sally. If you're using postcards, I go back and forth between using postcards, obviously, and sales letters. But I also go back and forth between using regular size 26-cent postcards to oversized postcards, where I'm going to invest 41 cents to do it. Obviously, the oversized postcard is going to stand out a little more. Now, going back, when you use a postcard, and then going into the next bullet point, which is how to make your mail grab people by the eyeballs, after that, after your approach, whether you're using a postcard, whether you're using a letter, how you're doing the letter, the next part that's really important is what you write on that letter. And here's the key. And here's the big switch that everyone has to make. The big switch that everyone has to make, and that I made, and I'm still making, and because this is a process that goes on forever. The key is to make sure you're writing with the other person in mind, not you. They don't care about the 6-foot trophy that's in your window. All they care about is what you can do for them. So if you're writing a letter, you need to make sure you look at every single word and you ask yourself, is this sentence, is this paragraph benefit-oriented? And you think of the WIIFM, which simply means, what is in it for me? You have to switch your viewpoint. You have to put your prospect's glasses on and take your glasses off. That's the key. And the first step would be to make sure that you're using a proper headline. Your direct mail, your copywriting lives and dies on your headline. And real quick, let's just run through, if we're using a letter, let's just run through the different parts of the letter. All right, the first and most important part is the compelling headline. Okay, it needs to really stop the reader in their tracks, and it's the most important piece of any mail, any postcard, whatever it is. And the next part is the subheadline. That's just going to get them to keep reading. After that is the greeting. The most powerful thing is to make it personal. Then you have your intro. And in your intro, what you do is you begin to create a problem or address a desire. You can flip it through either side. You can go with the fear side, which is, hey, this is a big problem. The sky is falling. You better pay attention. Or it could be something towards the benefit side of things, like, let's say you're working with children. Do you want your child to be on the honor roll, yes or no? Of course, that's a yes. So that's just an example just off the top of my head. So you're going to go with your intro, and you're either going to state a problem and scare the crap out of them, like, hey, you know, your teenager's heading for, you know, teenage suicide, or you're going to address a benefit that's a desire. Again, it's the whole pleasure-pain principle. So you think about, hey, I can either write because people are avoiding pain, and show them what they can do to avoid this pain, or I can write to help them move towards pleasure. It really depends on your personality, what you want to do, and the personality of your school. Next thing you do is you establish your credibility. Why are you qualified to help this person? And here, I'll give you guys a website. and you can actually see this whole thing in action. It's www.karatesuccess.com. That's our school website. And if you click on Need Information for Children, don't go there now. Wait till you get off the call so you can focus here. If you click on the information for children, you'll basically see these steps. The next thing you do, if you're using the problem, you basically agitate it a little. So let me go back to one. Establish your credibility, which is why are you qualified? And, you know, just the fact that you own a school makes you qualified, believe it or not. Because to the average person, even though we know that there's no regulations in our industry and anybody can pretty much open a school, that's a whole other subject for another day, right? Just that by itself is enough to have your credibility. Just remember that, okay? And for me, I've been teaching martial arts professionally for 10 years, and that's true, I have. So that's part of my credibility. I've worked with thousands of children. That's part of my credibility. Just an example. So you think about your past, and remember, you are credible. Just because you have a school, I don't care if it's you're brand new and you have one student, you're still credible. You remember that. Next step is if you're using the problem pain, you agitate a little bit, almost like taking out your salt shaker, pouring a little salt in the wound. If you're using the pleasure approach, you start to paint that picture of how wonderful it is. Then you explain a little bit about how your program works. You use bullet points to summarize. Then you introduce your special offer, no-risk offer, irresistible offer, and tell them why you're doing this. I'm doing this because I'm new to the neighborhood. I'm doing this because it's my 10th anniversary. Whatever it is, you give them a reason why you're doing it, because people believe you for when you mention the reason. They don't just think you're a nice guy, to put it that way. Then you close. You basically tell the person what they need to do next. And you don't want to be just warm and fuzzy about this. You need to be very direct. Pick up the phone and call me right now. Ask for our program director, Mrs. J, and what she's going to do is make arrangements for you to come in for your special private visit where we're going to cover blank, blank, blankety, blank, blank, blank. Okay? After that, you have your PS, which basically summarizes a little bit, and you nudge a little bit more to take action. That is basically a formula that you can write, that you can use to write your own sales letter. Okay, now, what you'll find if you go through the link that Kathy gave you, well, the actual, I think it's a Black Belt Club letter or leadership letter, upgrade letter, you'll see a lot of those things in place, and you'll see a slight variance because, again, these people are people you already have a relationship with, but you'll see a lot of these bullet points in place. And, that's sometimes the hardest part. You can use this template, but sometimes the hardest part is actually writing the stuff. If you're not schooled, then it takes a while to do it. But, again, it's one of those things that once you get it, you got it. All right, so here we go. Let's go into the next session, which is the next bullet point, which would be how to actually grow. So that's the key to, again, that's just to summarize, that's the key to making your mail stand out is to follow a proven formula. Plain and simple. Now, here's the best part about it. I always recommend to start off with a sales letter. And what I mean by that is sit down and actually pretend you're talking to one person and try to convince them to join your school with just using your written words. What would you say to that person? That's where you start. Now, from there, if that works, what you do is you then recycle. A lot of my postcards actually have elements of the sales letters I've used over the years and over time. Because if it works, it works. You just basically take it from one and put it on another piece. Different VIP passes and things we've done over time basically have the elements of the sales letter because it worked. Anyway, so that's how you get people to respond is you write to them. That's the idea. And the way you grab people by the eyes is you just keep going down the path of, hey, this is great. This is good. Wow, I have this problem too. And you write, you put yourself in their shoes. Let's talk about selecting the best mailing list, and we're going to talk about what I call list segmentation, okay? And say you're starting from scratch, you have zero people in your school, you're brand new, what you're going to have to go get, write this down, is what we call a cold list. Now, a cold list is basically when you call a company like InfoUSA, or you go online to, I guess, InfoUSA.com, and you think about the first question you ask yourself is, who? That's the first question you always ask yourself in any marketing is who. Okay, who do I want in my studio? Let's just pretend, for argument's sake, that you want parents of and you want kids ages 7 to 12 and parents that are, you know, two-parent households that own their own home, and that's who your ideal student would be. Okay, you go to InfoUSA and you said, I need, you just tell them what you want. Here's what I need, and I need them from these zip codes. You can, depending on where your studio is located, you can maybe you draw from 3, 4, or 5 zip codes. Think about the zip codes that you can draw from, 10, 15 miles around your school, and purchase those zip codes. That would be what we call a cold list. Those people are suspects because you basically suspect that they would have an interest. You're not really sure if they have an interest, but they're your suspects because that's who you want in your school. And the best way to approach them is using the sneak up approach with a letter. And here's a good idea for a sequence, guys and girls that are listening. Good idea for a sequence is to do a letter, letter number one, letter number two, postcard number three, I'm sorry, postcard number one, postcard number two, and that will give you about 4 contacts. What you find when you commit to a direct mail sequence is that your phone rings more after on the second letter than it did from the first, and your phone rings more from the third postcard than it did from the second letter, and so on and so on. So that's when you look at a cold list, that would be a cold list of who are the people that I want in my studio. Next list you have in your school would be what we call our prospects. Now your prospects are anybody that inquires about your studio. After this call's done and you check out that CarateSuccess.com, you're going to see an opportunity to actually what we call opt in and get some information about the studio. Once someone actually opts in, they end up on the prospect database in our software. And the reason why they end up in a prospect database is because they took a step towards us. If someone walks into your school and says, hey, how much are lessons? They're a prospect. If they call your school and say, how much are lessons? They're a prospect. What you need to have in place, and this kind of goes back to one of the calls I did, and I think it was in the summertime, is you got to have a bulletproof system for collecting their information and making them prospects. I actually got a call this morning from someone who actually walked in, looked up, and found their information. They actually walked in November, and they just called off a postcard that we sent out the other day. So you need to have a bulletproof system in place to get people's contact information. It's very important. So you can get it on the web. You can have it to where when they call you, your program director has a smooth way of getting their contact information. They become prospects. Then you have what I call your lukewarm prospects. So they're your hot prospects. Then you have your lukewarm prospects. Your lukewarm prospects are anybody who you basically forced. You forced them to give you their contact info. Maybe you did a school demo or a school talk or worked in a preschool or worked in a daycare and you required a permission slip, or they came to a birthday party or they came to a special event. You pretty much forced them into it. They go on I call it the semi-warm prospect list. And you would communicate with them a little differently. Jumping around a little bit, another person who would be on your prospect list would be anyone who came into your intro and decided not to sign up. They're still a prospect. They're not dead. You know, it's not just, crumble this up and throw it in trash. You stay on those people, and you keep mailing to them. So that's how you can grow your own list very quickly, is by other forms of marketing that you're doing. You basically make sure everybody gets put on the right database. I think it was in the year that this new school has been open, there is a little over 1,000 names, actually close to 1,100 names on the database. Of people that we've made inquire, people that we've gone out and actually forced them to give us their contact info through different marketing activities that we were doing. And that's an asset to the school. Just as an example, send out a postcard, get a call. Your list, never forget it, your list is an asset. The other list in your school, which are a lot of times overlooked by school owners, let me get a sip of water. I made the mistake of having a Sprite nearby, so I'm kind of like burping while I'm talking here. I apologize. A lot of school owners overlook this, is your current students, your 6-month or 12-month students, or wherever they are a separate list in your school. Here's an example. Just that freebie that you got there, that download, that's one of the letters that goes to someone who's not yet on a committed longer-term program. So your 12-month students, it happens to be 12 months for me, so it's habitual that I say that. Your 6-month or your 12-month students, they are a separate mailing list. Then you have your elite students, which are the people that are going to, drink the punch if you ask them. You know, they're so committed. Maybe they're your Black Belt Club members or your leadership members or your elite leadership members, whatever they are. They are a separate mailing list. You know, they need to get things like maybe the Kono Mag, or they need to get things, special things in the mail from time to time from you that show your appreciation. Then you have your whole student database as a whole that would get maybe your monthly newsletter and things like that, and your Christmas cards and all that good stuff. After that, another list in your school would be your past students. We all have those, okay? So your past students are another list, and they're very valuable to you, and you want to market to them. A few different ways you can market to them. You can send them your constant updates, your newsletter, make them feel like they never left in some way, shape, or form. Or, you know, obviously you can send them offers from time to time to get back in your program. One of the big parts of any direct mail campaign is the use of testimonials. Make sure that you're gathering, you have testimonials in your marketing materials, and we call that proof. And here's a couple of rules for testimonials. Make sure they are specific. You don't want to just have the person's name as, you know, Joe S. Make sure the quote is specific. Instead of having someone say, oh, this school is great. Well, okay, that's not really good enough. But when you say things like, hey, in 2.5 weeks, my child's confidence soared dramatically, and they're now looking people in the eyes when they talk to them. That is specific. Then you always have a picture, and you have the full name, and you have where they're from. Okay, and that's believability. Now, here's a simple way to get testimonials, let me tell you. Easy way to get testimonials. If we were doing this live, and I can actually see everyone who's out there, and I said, everyone, raise your hand if you've ever gotten a compliment about your martial arts school program. I bet you everyone out there would raise their hand. They'd say, oh, yeah, people come to me and compliment me all the time, tell me what a great job I'm doing. Well, there's your opportunity right there for your testimonials. A wise man once said, there is no security, only opportunity. So there's your opportunity right now, right there to get testimonials. What you say is, wow, that's great. I really appreciate that feedback. Can you do me a favor? Now, if someone just complimented you, do you think that they wouldn't want to do you a favor? Of course not. Oh, yeah, no problem, Mr. Dolphins. What can I do for you? Hey, you said that blankety blank, 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 and his confidence rose. Would you mind if I quote you on that? Oh, sure, no problem. Okay, great. I'm going to write that down as you said it. You can just go ahead and, you know, sign off on that, because I'm going to probably use it on my website. And, great, I really appreciate it. Oh, can you stand over here for me? Oh, yeah, sure. Get out the camera. Get Joey. Stand next to Mom. Click. Oh, yeah, I'm going to put your picture with it. And there you go. You have a testimonial. Go to the website. You'll see a bunch of those, okay? So that's just an example. You've got to have that proof to back it up. So we have a bunch of different lists in our studio that we could use, and we have a whole bunch of things that we can do with our direct mail. Before we go into the five deadly mistakes of direct mail, because this actually is something I really wanted to spend a little more time on. In the past, I've done a whole teleseminar just on this. So I want to kind of blow through these other bullet points pretty quickly and then get into the mistakes. So let's get into that, okay? All right, here. And these mistakes are, again, they can really cost you a ton of money if you don't adhere to, if you make them, all right? So here's deadly mistake number one. Deadly mistake number one is trust. That's right, trust. And here's the deal. Just like any business transaction or investment you make, you need to be careful of who you trust. Here's what I mean. You get all the facts before you invest in someone or something or a business. Same thing is true when you invest in direct mail, is you have to get all the facts. And the deal is you need to educate yourself and become competent at copywriting. That's kind of what we're doing. You're educating yourself right now. You become competent at layout. You become competent at how to structure an offer that's going to work. You know, one of my clients, one of my secret society members, who's brand new, the other day he emailed me. He said, yeah, you know, I try to do buddy referrals drives, and I try to give away sparring gear, and no one really wants it. Well, you know, that's just a fundamental flaw. You need to know how to structure an offer that people are going to want. You know, not everybody's thrilled when it comes to sparring gear. You know, go find the latest thing that they're all going crazy about. Offer them that. I bet they'll want to get involved in your buddy referral. That's just an example, and that can be used in any kind of direct mail. You got to offer them something that they're going to enjoy. There's a lot of services and agencies out there. that offer fancy-looking mail pieces at discounted prices, you need to be very careful because some of these agencies actually don't know what you just learned in 30 minutes of listening to this. And that's the truth. Sorry to bust anyone's bubble, but that's the truth. You know, there's a lot of things out there that'll do this for us, and not just for martial arts schools, but for everywhere. You know, hey, I can handle your direct mail, no problem. Well, I don't know what we just talked about. And here's one of the reasons why they're able to give you that great pricing in most cases. They usually make mistake number two. Deadly mistake number two, I believe, is mailing anything less than first class. I know that bulk is cheaper, but here's the problem. A lot of times you have no clue if it's going to get there, and you have no clue when it's going to get there. Bulk mail is the first mail to be discarded by postal employees that are just had a bad mood or in a bad mood that day. Bulk mail, again, you never know if it's going to get there. First class is totally worth it. And I'm telling you, I wish someone told me this years ago when I first started using direct mail. It would have saved a lot of money. And mistake number three is approach. Many people foolishly think that because they send something in the mail, that the recipient has to read it or open it. It's a huge mistake. Your people are busy. Your prospects are busy. They've got kids. They've got households to run, bills to pay, other obligations. You need to compel them to open and read your mail. And they'll do it. If you take the right approach and you basically grab them, you know, grab their attention early on. And again, you don't want this. You know, you don't want to make that mistake because just because you've sent something out, it doesn't mean that someone's got to open it. Okay. Deadly mistake number four. Okay, is not following a simple checklist. And I originally learned this checklist from Dan Kennedy, who's a world famous marketing guru. Number one is to put all essential information in your mail piece, and you want to have a map on your piece. You want to have your phone number, your website. Don't leave any of that out. Okay, make sure you double check to make sure you have all of it on there. Number two on this checklist, this quick checklist, is am I assuming anything? Meaning, am I assuming that they know who I am? Am I assuming that they're familiar with me? Here's the deal. Coca-Cola, they can assume that you know who they are. You cannot. Don't assume for a second that just because you've been around for a while, so to say, that people know who you are. You need to let them know. We are right on Gunning River Road and Bay Avenue, right next to the FedEx store, across from the diner. Okay, you need to let them know where you are and who you are, okay? Now, here's deadly mistake number five. Deadly mistake number five is one I see a lot of school owners make, unfortunately. And this is the deadliest. This is the one that just kills you. And that is they do one-shot mailing. If I had a choice, if someone said, Mike, would you rather mail one time to a list of 10,000 or would you rather mail 10 times to a list of 1,000? I'm going to go with the list of mailing 10 times a list of 1,000 every single time. So one-shot mailing is the deadliest mistake. So when you begin planning any kind of campaign, you have to plan for at least three steps over no more than about a five-week span. Three is the minimum. So when you make your budget, you budget for three or more steps in a sequence. So again, like I said, letter, postcard, whatever the case, each time varying your approach. And we've mixed this up in a lot of different ways that really make it pretty cool. One time I had a four-step sequence, and the last step was sent with the third step was sent with a picture of a kid holding a magnifying glass, and it said, we've been looking all over for you. We've sent you two letters, blah, blah, blah. The fourth step in that sequence was actually a postcard, again, with recycled copy from the sales letter and the bullet points in the offer. That was a picture of my daughter eating a peanut butter sandwich and with the question, are you nuts? You know, we've sent you two letters and and a postcard, and you must be crazy. You must be nuts because you haven't called my daddy at the karate school yet. And I know a couple of students that called from that one, you know, where they were kind of laughing, like, yeah, you know, I thought, you know, I didn't want to be nuts, so I called you, you know, by the way, your daughter's so cute. So you can have fun with this too, by the way. So again, you need to go in with the idea of hey, I'm going to do this 3 or 4 times. I'm going to get committed to this. Now, here's the thing. The most painful part of this process, after you get over the fact that it's 26 cents to mail a postcard and 41 cents to mail a letter, you know, that's easy to get over. The most painful part of putting of getting the stuff to work for you is sitting down and actually writing something. That's the most painful part. And that's one of the reasons why I actually came up with the Quick Karate Sales Letters program, which if you follow the link on the site, you can check it out. And there's 29 now, basically powerful letters. The one that I gave you guys is definitely not the most powerful on there. It's one of the really good ones. There's all of them are good, but that one's not the best one. I know that for sure. There's 29 letters like that, 4 or 5 expert articles, and all the stuff is already written for you. That's why I came up with that program, because I know how hard it is to do it, and I spent the time doing it over the years, and this has been a 3-4 year process. So you know, if you decide to grab that, you end up getting 4 or 5 years of experience, like the snap, you know, basically the snap of your fingers. So I know this subject could sometimes be a little daunting for school owners. Try to make it as fun as possible, but here's the thing. I was just listening to Brian Tracy the other day. He said, some things you can do are real easy, but they don't require any mental effort, you know, or they don't require, what did he say? He said, some things you can do that are very easy, but there's no return on them, okay? And he said, some things you can do are seem somewhat hard, but yet there's this huge return on the effort you put out. So same thing with direct mail. The reason why not everybody's good at it is because it's not easy to understand. Again, oh, yeah, stick something in the mail and send it out. There's a lot more to it than that. We just really covered the basics today, and I wanted to go through it pretty quickly and then take some questions because I know that there's always a lot of questions when it comes to this this subject. So let's just recap the 5 mistakes. Mistake number 1 is trust. Be careful who you trust, okay? Educate yourself on the process. So if someone comes to you and wants to basically sell you direct mail services, you know what to look for. Mistake number 2 is mailing anything less than first class. Mistake number 3 is your approach. Again, we talked about sneak up approach. We talked about postcards, oversized postcards. I've used oversized envelopes, all kind of crazy things that I'm not going to get into now. And then we have number 4, which is not following that checklist, just make sure all your essential information, don't assume that people know who you are. And the next one, you make it a direct response ad on that checklist, which is you give them a reason to respond beyond just calling you right away, maybe go to a website or something like that, and make sure you have that in there. Deadly mistake number 5 is the one-shot mailing. That's the deadliest that school owners make. They just, oh, I sent out a postcard and nothing happened. Well, then how long did you wait before you sent the next one? Well, I didn't send the next one because nothing happened with the first one. 2 things I think about when I hear that story. I either think, A, the list was bad, right? So they used a bad list. Or B, what they wrote on the mail piece, the letter, the postcard, whatever it is, was just so bad that it was just too self-serving, and it just didn't speak to the language of the person. And there's a lot of things that factor into abysmal response. And let's open it up for some questions. This way we can maybe shed some light on our subject here for some of you guys.
Mike, we have about 5 questions that have been submitted on the web.
Good. That should fill us some time.
Okay, yes. Tammy had submitted one about how do you choose compelling headlines?
How do you choose compelling headlines? Well, first thing you got to remember is that headline writing is a formula, okay? Headline writing is totally a formula, and there's a few different things. If you want to make some notes down, write some notes down. I use a lot of headlines, how-to. I like to use the word discover in my headlines. Who else? There's just a lot of different formulas. So basically what you end up doing is you end up making your headlines pretty formulaic. But here's the next way, Tammy, right? Tammy's want to answer that question? The next way you choose a headline, Tammy, the headline should stand on its own. As in, one of the best letters... One of the letters I used for my studio brand new one we opened it was at the top of my head. I don't want to take time to pull up my Word file.
But it was something like discover the hidden secrets to developing a more focused, confident, and physically fit child, guaranteed. The sub-headline was how to raise a leader, not a follower. So if that's still on its own, and then I had just a number at the bottom, call this number to find out more, that could have done it. That would have sparked enough curiosity and enough benefit to where it could stand by itself. So I hope that makes a little sense, Tammy. But that letter, the headline was pretty formulaic. Discover the hidden secrets to weight loss. Discover the hidden secrets to a better sex life. You know, whatever. Okay? So that's pretty formulaic, if that kind of makes sense. And then it speaks to the benefit of the person I'm talking to and serves their self-interest. It doesn't say anything about my vertical sidekick, which, you know, I can still do. it doesn't say anything about that. It just talks about what it does for it. I hope that answers your question, Tammy.
Okay. I think it will. If not, she'll let us know.
Okay.
The next one on the web is Dennis in Billings.
Sure.
And he's asking, he said, you know, what do you say to the person who's like me who will not take the time to read a 4-page sales letter? He says, I personally throw them away if they're longer than a page. I don't have time to read that much. I think that if the person can't get their message across in a page or two at the most, they're trying too hard to sell me and I won't read it. Do you have shorter letters for these people? What do you think about this?
Yeah, well, you know, again, I said I vary. You know, I always recommend, and I vary going between letters and actual postcards. So, of course, with a postcard, I mean, you can't argue that it's too long for you to read. So you always vary between the two, of course. And, again, my postcard, just like I gave an example of how you can steal from one to the other, that headline example I gave you could easily be used on a postcard totally by itself. Call now for a free month, you know, and see for yourself. So that could easily be, you know, easily speak to the person who's not gonna read it. But here's the deal. And what was his name again? I'm sorry.
Oh, that submitted the question. You caught me. You caught me brain dead. Dennis. That was Dennis. I'm sorry.
Dennis,
it was Dennis.
Dennis from Billings. I'm sorry, Kenny.
Yeah.
Dennis from Billings. And here's the thing, Dennis, is that, you know, the question, if we were to interact, I'd say, do you read books? And if you answered yes, I'd say, well, how come you don't stop reading at the first page of the book? You know, because you're interested in the subject. All I can say is that, you know, if you don't have, and no one has time, so you're not the only one that doesn't have time. Nobody has time. So that's the first thing we got to remember. But if your letter is compelling enough, and here's how I can get Dennis to read it. 3-page letter. Imagine if I said I have a letter from all of Dennis's ex-girlfriends about how Dennis is and how Dennis was with them, and it was 4 pages. I bet Dennis would read it. Okay? So the idea is that it has to match perfectly to the person's interests. And I know he would read that letter because I'd read it too. And I'm not Dennis. So curiosity is a big one, and it has to be. You know, that letter that I sent you, that I gave you guys, I've had people that told me they've read that whole thing and they've walked in and said, man, everything you said in that letter is absolutely true. You know, we need to set goals. We're not going to quit. So, again, you know, it's hard to answer that question, but the idea is, you know, hopefully they'll remember my letters that I sent you because that means I'm not doing a great job because the goal is to really make sure you're interested enough in the subject to where you will actually read it. And that's the idea. And then the other thing, Dennis, if that's not good enough for you, the other thing to remember is you break up your copy. Again, check out that website. It's very broken up. It's a long letter, but it's broken up into what we call subheadlines. And it breaks up the copy in a way that even if you're a skimmer, which a lot of people are skimmers, you'll still get the message. And honestly, that's a subject that I'm working more on, is making sure that both forms, both my skim, my subheadlines and my letter, can stand on their own, and person can still get the message. That's the next skill I'm actually mastering. So that's another side of it, too, is that your skimmers should still be able to get your message. And, again, I'm not sure if you look at the first letter and then throw the three, you know, first page and then throw the rest out, or you just flip through it. You would be a skimmer if you just flip through it. I'm not really sure. I never sat down and watched you read a letter. But I hope that answers your question as best as possible. You know, the curiosity thing, You know, again, if I had that letter from, you know, all 10 of your ex-girlfriends, I'm sure you'd read it. Go ahead, Kathy.
Wow, that was quite a compelling example. Thank you.
Okay.
In other words, the headline's going to draw them in or not. We have about 5 more questions now on the web. Charles in Columbia, he wanted to know if letter 1 and letter 2 are the same, or how are they different?
You know, they're different but similar in a lot of ways. And a lot of times they may have a different headline or they may have a different approach. So letter number one could be a sneak up in, say, 8.5 by 11, and letter number two could be a sneak up in a, let's just pretend like a pastel invitation type envelope, like a, you know, square envelope, still 41-cent stamps. That's an example of how they can be different in approach, okay? Or it could be a stealth mailer, which anybody who does a newsletter, most of the time you do your newsletters, they're called stealth mailers because you just kind of fold them over. So they can be different in their approach. A lot of times they're going to be, they're going to highlight on some different benefits, but of course tell a similar story, and most, you know, 99% of the time they're going to have a similar offer or an up-the-ante offer. Hey, I promised you 2 weeks free. However, since I didn't hear from you after I sent you the first letter, I'm going to give you 2 more weeks, give you a total of 4 weeks free. So that's an example of different but similar. You're safe. Sometimes you can be very safe sending the same letter out with just maybe a different cover and a different offer because, again, just like Dennis said, the people that didn't respond to your last letter, if they're getting your second one, they didn't respond for certain reasons. They didn't read the whole thing. So you may cut a page down. You may beef it a page up. It really depends on the situation and what your message is and who you're talking to.
Okay.
So different from
Tim. Okay. Thank you. But Tammy has another question. She's asking, how many would you say is a minimum number of recipients or recipient mailings for results? Because we want to hit them 4 times.
Well, again, it depends on your budget, you know.
Okay.
It totally depends on your budget. So, you know, that answer is there's probably no minimum and there's no maximum. Because, again, I mean, if you're only working with, let's just say you targeted, let's just say you were in a primarily middle class area. And your real goal, and you were having a lot of trouble with our, you know, the media's recession, all that stuff, and you were having a lot of trouble with your middle-class families making ends meet and then, you know, not being able to swing your lunch. Let's just pretend that was your situation at the moment. Well, let's just pretend you were in a primarily middle-class area, but, of course, in that area, there's always some people in that area that are very high income, all right? They're not all in the same boat. There's a few of them that are, you know, say there's 1,000 people that are, you know, making 80 grand a year and they would be considered middle class with their household. But then there's 200 people that are making $200,000 a year. Same, you know, basically same kind of living expenses. So obviously the people with the 200 grand, they have a lot more disposable income for a martial arts lesson, no doubt about it. So what if you just want to target those 200 and you want to hit them with something every week until they show up at your studio and say, please do not send me another letter. So there is no minimum and there's no maximum. It really depends on your test. You know, if you're not quite sure when you want to, because like I said, the best thing to do with direct mail is to send it out a minimum at least once a month. That's really the best thing to do, whether it be your accumulated list or what we call your cold leads. Send it out once a month. You usually can't go wrong if you're sending the right things. It'll start to pay off on itself. So if you want to test something, by all means, do it, and then mail a smaller list. But if you want to up the repetition and you're on a tight budget, which most schools are, you know, there's not an infinite amount of marketing dollars, you can get smaller segments of the list, and you can really rapid fire it, you know. So, again, there's no right or wrong answer to your question. It's a good question.
Okay. All right, thanks. And I think one of the other questions several people are asking is the good old, you know, what's a good response rate? You know, what's a good average response rate to expect?
Well, I think I illustrated that in my first example. And the reason why I illustrated that first example is I didn't want to blow smoke in the air on anybody. Because when I first started, if they were paying attention, it said, let's say I mail 1,000 names. And let's pretend that it cost me $1 a name. So that would be, what, $1,000, right? You know, 41 cents, you know, envelope, you know, printing. Again, let's just say it was a dollar. You can be more or less depending on how you do it, right? So if it cost me $1,000 and I mailed 1,000 names and I got 3 people to enroll in my school out of that 1,000, I mean, that's 0.003% response, right? Is that right? Okay. So if I got 3 out of 1,000, that's like point whatever response that actually converted to a student. I'd be very happy with that because, again, my initial transaction is $369. And even if my initial transaction isn't enough to break even, say your initial transaction is only $249 or $200 and you got those same 3 people. All right, you spent $1,000, you got $600 back. However, next month, granted your retention's good, you've got it all back. It was a winning investment. I mean, if I said to you, hey, give me $1,000 and in 2 months I'll give you back $1,200, well, it's not a bad way to return, although you could do a lot better. And what I would encourage everybody to do, since, like, the cost of, like, pizza is rising, you should definitely raise your tuition. No doubt about it. You should raise your tuition. I mean, this economy is going through a cycle right now, and the cycle is unfortunately going to get rid of a lot of school owners that are not charging decent rates. And you need to raise those rates up, bite the bullet of a few people that can't afford it, and you need to stay at a certain rate for a while and be there. Again, you know, unless you're kind of like, you know, teaching with zero expenses, and that's always good too. But if you're the average school with a rent and a mortgage and, you know, staff and bills, then, you know, you really do need to raise your rates, and you'll stay ahead of the game. That's a whole other discussion for another day, you know.
All right. Well, Mike, thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
Did you want to say anything else before we wrap the wrap?
No, I think we're good. Again, I know you've seen it. You know, the actual sales letter template program. Very proud of that. It's been a top producer and a top seller in the industry in some of my stuff that I have, and I've gotten a lot of great feedback on it because it really does a lot of the heavy lifting. And you know, it's definitely something I was very proud of, and I'm just glad that the feedback I've gotten from this is pretty good. And this is a subject that I really enjoy. I think that a lot of people do, you know, misuse it in some way, shape, or form. So anything that I can say, hopefully today, really, you know, if anything, it's saved our people a lot of pain and agony because, again, there's some certain things you can do, and you're playing with your school's dollars when you do this. And it's tough, you know, when you throw things out there and they don't work. So I hope that, you know, a few of the things that some of the notes that people have taken will actually first and foremost save them from any mistakes, and then, of course, obviously put some students in their door.